Sorry?
Why did you order the super top again?
Because the Gemara about Basra that we read last week.
Yeah.
So what about it?
Why did we end up reordering the super top? Because last week, the Gemara said it's in chronological order.
The order you're talking about, which Nevi'im specifically? Right, right. So Gemara said that the other order is, there are two orders. One a chronological order, and the other is thematic.
Correct.
Correct? Yeah. That we want to be Masbe Churban to Churban, Nechama to Nechama. That's what those are the two different, why do we follow the one that we follow?
Right, right, right.
Okay, so which one do we follow? Which is the correct order that we follow? It's the one that's in our Tanakh?
That's,
chronological order, which by the way logically seems to be the more correct approach, the chronological order. I think that's the reason why we do it, but the thematic order also has obviously a tremendous value. Okay, you know, maybe I'm going to discuss that also because I have another reason to discuss it. I want to just begin Ezra, and I want to read the first paragraph I possibly can today and discuss really the proclamation of Koresh, as it's known. Before that, I want to discuss something else, which is a little bit by way of background. So let's just read the first pasuk, beginning of Ezra. Ubishnat achad leKoresh melech Paras. So if you have a, let's read the pasuk first, be fair. The first year of Cyrus, the king of Persia, and then we have the following statement, which is a bit enigmatic. Lichlos dvar Hashem mipir Yirmiyah. Somehow this seems to follow upon the heels of the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu. Of course, the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu, if you remember, was that Hashem is going to somehow punish Bavel. Bavel was responsible for the Churban HaMikdash, and this Pasuk, or the Pesukim over here, are really a Hemshech to Divrei HaYamim Beis. If you have a Tanakh for a moment, I'm going to refer you to two things. One is Divrei HaYamim Beis. Take a look. You have Divrei HaYamim, which unfortunately many of us never really get to, but if you look in Divrei HaYamim Beis and look in Perek Lamed Vav or Divrei HaYamim Beis towards the end, everyone have Perek Lamed Vav? I'm going to read the last number of Sukkim that basically describe the Churban HaMikdash, and of course, as we mentioned last week as well, one of the Nevi'im who really probably was the Navi of gloom and doom, that's certainly how Klal Yisrael saw him, was the Yirmiyahu Navi. And the entire Sefer really is devoted to chastising Klal Yisrael in a very strong fashion, to the point we mentioned last week they wanted to kill him. And ultimately, unfortunately, his Nevuah came to fruition. It came to the fore. And then if you look at the end of Divrei HaYamim, the last chapter is Perek Lamed Vav of Divrei HaYamim Bet, and you have the following Pesukim. I just want to read some of the Pesukim. I'm starting from Yud Aleph. You see the Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Yud Aleph, and Divrei HaYamim? It says, Ben Esim B'Yachad Shona Tzidkiyahu B'Malcho, one of the last kings. He was a big tzaddik. B'Yachad Netvei Shona B'Malach B'Yerushalayim. 11 years he was king in Yerushalayim. V'Yasa Rab Eini Hashem Elokov. Lo Nichna Milifnei Yirmiyahu Hanavi Pi Hashem. How is it possible that one could be a tzaddik and not somehow be nichna to Yirmiyahu HaNavi, who is essentially saying over the war from Hashem? The Gam B'Melech Nebuchadnezzar Morad Asher Ishbiyahu B'Elokim. This is a famous discussion in Chazal. He also rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. Shmuel was administered to him. Vayokesh Esarpo Vayamis Ezavav Mishuv El Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Gam Kol Suri HaKohanim V'Om Hirbu Limol Mal Kichol Tu Avot HaGoyim Vayitamuz Beis Hashem Asher Higdish Yerushalayim. What did Hashem do? Vayishlach Hashem Elokei Avoseim Aleim B'Yad Malachav Hashkeim V'Shaloach. What did Hashem do? He sent B'Yad Malachav. Who are the Malachim that we're talking about? Whom did Hashem send? Navi after Navi after Navi. And they were warned. They were threatened. They called Malachim. Hashkeim V'Shaloach means every morning. Vayishlach Hashem Elokei Avoseim Aleim B'Yad Malachav Hashkeim V'Shaloach Kichol La'amo V'Yamono Hashem had mercy on us. And what happened? Vayu Malivim Malachi Elokim U'Bosim B'Dvarav U'Mitatim B'Neviyah. What did we do? Essentially we derided, we scoffed, we mocked, we essentially made fun of these Neviyah, we poked fun at them. Alos Hamas Hashem V'Yam Aleim Mape. Till that point came of no return, Hashem's anger was kindled to the point where simply there was no cure. Vayal aleihem es melech kazdim. Of course, whom is the melech hakazdim? Who is the king of the kazdim? Whom Hashem sicked upon us, if I can use that term. He sicked the melech hakazdim upon us. Who is that? Nebuchadnezzar. Vayarog bachureim bachereb v'veis mikdashim v'lacham al bachru v'sul azokim v'yashesh. Yash means an elderly, very elderly person. Hakom nasim v'yadom. And then what happened? The whole kli beis ha'elokim hagdolim v'aktanim. All the kelim of the beis hamikdash, large and small. V'otzos beis Hashem, v'otzos hamelach v'sarav hakol hevi bavel. What happened? They were all brought to Babel. Vayisuf was beis ha'elokim. Here at the description, very graphic and short. They burned the house of Hashem. Vayinatu et chomas Yerushalayim. They more or less destroyed the wall of Yerushalayim. V'chol ha'moseh asaf v'bayish, all the palaces. V'chol kli machmadeh lahashchis. Vayegel hasheris menachereb el Babel. And all the remnant, those who remained, what happened to them? They were exiled to Babel. The Navi says, "Vayilo the banav avodim abloch malchut paras." And all this was to carry out the nevuah of which Navi? Yirmiyahu. Look at the next pasuk. Chavaleth memalos dvar Hashem b'fi Yirmiyahu. All this was a realization of the nevuah of Yirmiyahu. Adratzisa haaretz esham soseh kol yemei hashama shavasa lemalos shivim shana. The nevuah, in effect, took really, if you will, its toll on Klal Yisrael, but it was for a period of how many years were we supposed to be in exile? What does the pasuk say? 70 years. This 70 years, interestingly enough, you recall this language found elsewhere in Chumash?
Yes.
Where?
Oh, in Chumash?
Yes, in the context of Shemitah, correct? Klal Yisrael is taken to task without observing Shemitah, because during the Shemitah year, what's supposed to happen? The land is supposed to lie fallow. The land is not fertile. It's supposed to lie fallow, it's supposed to rest. And this is, we are punished for not observing all those Shemitahs, and connected that, the 70 years of Golus Babel. And now we have the end of Divrei Hayamim, and now Ezra essentially is an extension of the end of Divrei Hayamim. U'vishnas achas l'koresh mel ha'paras, l'chloz v'ar Hashem b'fi Yirmiyah, heir Hashem b'sruach koresh mel ha'paras. What happened to Koresh? He had a epiphany, I guess one could describe it. Suddenly, what happened? He had this divine directive that came to him. What did he decide to do? I am essentially master of the universe. Hashem gave me everything. Total dominion. And guess what? I received the divine directive. Who was talking? A non-Jewish king, namely Cyrus. I received the directive from on high. Live no slow bayis b'Yerushalayim. Do you hear what is being said? He received the divine directive. What should he do? Rebuild the Beis Hamikdash in Jerusalem. Asher b'Yehuda. Mi vachem mikolamo Asher alokav imo b'yoal. Essentially, what is he throwing out to Klal Yisrael? A challenge. And what is the challenge? Make Aliyah. Mi vachem amo Asher alokav. Who is here among your nation, the nation of God, who will carry out this divine directive? Biyal means that he will what? Make Aliyah. Come back to Eretz Yisrael. And who is saying this?
King.
A non-Jewish king who receives some sort of divine message from on high. Okay, now let's turn to the Pasuk Aleph of Ezra, and you'll see this is exactly almost a taken straight from the end of Divrei Hayamim. Uvishnach achas the koresh mel haparas lechlos dvar Hashem mipi Yirmiyah. Heir Hashem esruach koresh mel haparas. Same language, correct? He has this divine kind of message that comes to him. And by the way, let me just mention also one more thing, since I referred here to Yirmiyahu HaNavi, just to show you a few places in Yirmiyahu. Look in Perek Chafei in Yirmiyahu. If you have your Tanakh with you, which you do, look in Yirmiyahu, Perek Chafei. You'll see there, again, the language that is relevant to this discussion. Perek Chafei, Pesukim Yud Alef Yud Beis. Perek Chafei, chapter 25, Pesukim Yud Alef Yud Beis, where the Navi says the following. You can even start from Pasuk Ches. Here's where the Navi actually is really delivering his very strong, strident kind of message. L'chein koma Hashem Tzokos, from Pasuk Ches. Yana shalosh shemata misdvarai. You didn't heed what I said. He didn't heed shalach v'lo kachtis kol mishpachol safel nu mashem. V'yal nebuchad v'etzam el babel avdi. V'aviyosim al oratz hazos v'yal yoshvei av'al kol agoyim v'el sofim v'acharam tim. He's going to come and he will simply utterly lay waste and make desolate your entire country. V'samtiyah l'shama v'lishreiko l'charvas olam. Literally, total desolation. V'acharam tim. I read that. It's going to be desolate. For how many years? 70 shana. Chazal says, connected all the years, they didn't observe how many cycles of Shemitah? 10 cycles of Shemitah. Each one, of course, 7 years. That they didn't observe. For that, they were punished with golus. Says Yirmiyahu, at the end of 70 years, then I'm going to take care of them. What will Hashem do? He will destroy Babylonia. Because Babel essentially is an agent, if you will, what the Tanakh calls Ashur Shevet Api. Hashem uses Ashur as a Shevet. What does a Shevet mean? He uses them as a stick. Hashem uses the different nations of the world as his sticks, as his, how shall we say, agents. You want to call them agent saboteur? That's what they are. So they go ahead and engage in all kinds of destructive activity, but then after they carry out their mission, then they simply, as I said, even though they are into huffing and puffing and blowing your house down, then their house is blown down after their mission has been carried out. So that's what the Navi says. Let me read the end of it. Yud Gimel. Yirmiyahu also, by the way, part of his prophecy is that all these massive nations, great nations, global empires, eventually they'll also meet their denouement. They'll also come to an end. All good things come to an end. And then he goes on to describe what's going to happen. So now back over here, in the beginning of Ezra. So Ezra tells us that Koresh had this divine message that came to him. Apparently there's both a public proclamation, Balpeh, and there's also at the same time a written letter, missive, that is sent out. Now look at this letter, which I'm very interested in. And the letter says the following. Ko amar Hashem, Koresh melech Paras, ko mamlechos haaretz nasan li Hashem elokei ha-shamayim. This is a rather arrogant kind of statement, but of course it fits a king of this ilk. Namely, essentially he says, I have dominion of where? Of everything. I am in total control, I'm in total reign. I reign everywhere, universally, I'm ubiquitous. And who gave this right to me? The Almighty. By the way, there were many kings, I don't know if you're aware of this historically, who also somehow saw their legal rights as coming from where? From on high. You know what I'm talking about? Anybody ever studied history here? Okay, I won't ask these questions any further. But anyway, so this is a statement, and this actually was the, as we'll see, in the Sefer Ezra, there were three Rishonot, that's the proper Hebrew term, three Rishonot, which refer to three different Malchi Paras, who actually gave permission for Jews to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and we will see about them momentarily. The first one, of course, was this one, was Koresh, and we're talking about between the years of 530 and 559. That's when this fellow reigned. Here it says B'shana Achaz the Koresh Melech Paras, when he became the king of Persia. And now let's divide the statement that he made into a number of different segments. Segment number one, first he says, that's statement one. He claims to have dominion based on what? Divine imprimatur. Somehow, he assumes that his ability to reign comes from Hashem. And this, by the way, is an idea that's found in Tanakh a number of times. Let me show you. There's a famous pasuk in Yeshayahu. Since you have the Tanakh already, why not? Let's have a little tour. Yeshayahu, the Navi, Perek Memhei. You have Perek Memhei in Shayahu, 45th chapter. We'll read the very beginning of Memhei. You'll see what I'm talking about. Kol Amar Hashem, the Nabi prophesies, the Nabi Yishayahu. Kol Amar Hashem Limishicho LeKoresh. What does the Nabi call Koresh? What does he call him? Mashiach. He calls Koresh, Yishayahu calls Koresh Mashiach, his anointed one. Asher Echzakti B'Imino, Hashem held on to his right hand, so to speak. Lirad Lefon of Goyim, Umasni Melachim Afatech, Liftoach Lefon of Blasayim, Usharim Leisagerim. He's going to open all the doors for him, and no gates will be closed. Ani Lefonecha Elech, who is going to, so to speak, accompany him on his mission? Who is going to be Malaveh? Koresh, who's going to even, shall we say, pave the way? Hashem. Vahadurim Ayasher Dalsos. Nechusha Ashaber. Dalsos Nechusha Ashaber. All the doors that are going to thwart, block, frustrate will be broken. Uvriche Barzal Gadea. Vanasati Lecha Otsos Choshek. Umadmuni Mestorim. Leman Teda. Ki Ani Hashem Akore Beshimcha Elokei Yisrael. What an astounding statement on the part of the Novi Yishayo. And as I said, this is a statement that's being made by the Navi about Koresh. But however, Pasuk Dal, let's read one more Pasuk since we're at it already. So the Navi says further, Leman Abdi Yaakov, Yisrael Bechiri. Means all this is being done for whose sake ultimately? For our sake. For the sake of the Jewish people. Leman Abdi Yaakov, Yisrael Bechiri. Just one second. Vo'ekro lecha bishmecha, achancha v'lo yidaticha. Now, the way I just want to be medayik, what does Koresh say? That when Koresh says that I was called by, how does he describe the God who called him? Elokei, Pasuk Beis Hashamayim. He does not say Elokei Yisrael. He says Elokei Hashamayim. Because apparently he somehow assumes that the God of Israel is associated with the heavenly gods, correct? That he knew of them, apparently. Most likely some, shall we say, Avodah Zarah, some idolatrous kind of idol and the like. Whatever the case is, it's clear that he is ascribing his atzlacha to these gods. Yeah, what do you want to say?
Doesn't the Gemara of Rosh Hashanah say that he didn't actually call Koresh Mashiach, he was just saying to Mashiach regarding Koresh?
That is what the Gemara says. You are 100% correct. But I'm only indicating the fiyah pshat. I'm talking about the pshut also mikra. The Gemara is saying adrash. But the Pshuto Shemikah seems to say, Kama Hashem Limishicho the Koresh. The Yishayahu seems to identify Koresh as a kind of Mashiach. And in one respect, he is a kind of Mashiach in terms of what he's about to do. Correct? But the fact of the matter is that Koresh was unquestionably a Ovid Avodah Zarah, no doubt about it. He was someone who was idolatrous, who worshipped idols, which was, of course, not uncommon in his days. But it's clear that Koresh now issues this proclamation. And that, what is the nature of the proclamation? That what was I commanded to do? To rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. He had this message from on high that he allegedly felt that he received to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, which is an astounding thing in and of itself. I just want to point out one more thing. The language that's used over here in the text of the message, of the missive that was sent, it says in the language of the Navi of Ezra, Asher BiYehuda. How does he identify the mission that he has to do? BiYerushalayim Asher BiYehuda. Isn't that a very strange kind of description of Yerushalayim? So where exactly, by the way, that's the Gemara. So you are aware of the Gemara, Baruch Hashem. It's Gemara Megillah, Gemara Zvachim, Gemara all of Shas. That where was the Beis HaMikdash located? The Beis HaMikdash was in the between who and whom? Between which two Shvatim? Binyamin and Yehuda. But Yerushalayim, certainly the general area of Yerushalayim is the area of Yehuda. So that's what he calls it. Yerushalayim Asher BiYehuda. But whatever the case is, he in effect seems to be giving every single Jew permission, those who want, can make Aliyah and come back to Yerushalayim and rebuild the Beis Elokim. Now I just want to read a little bit further. Pasuk Gimel, back in Ezra. Turn back to Ezra now. And the Navi says, Mi bachem mikol amo, yihi Elokad Imo, Biyal Liushalayim Hashem Biyehuda, Biyiven is Beis Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hu Elokim Asher Biyushalayim. So what is essentially embedded in this language in Pasuk Gimel? Essentially, he's giving them an option, not an obligation. Mi bachem. Apparently, they have an option. Those who wish can make aliyah to Yerushalayim and rebuild the Beis Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hu Ho Elokim Asher Yerushalayim. By the way, notice that he identifies the Beis Hamikdash with God. Somehow he sees the two as being coterminous, as being identical. That's how he describes the Beis Hamikdash. I continue. I just want to read one or two more things here that I mentioned. And that is, V'chol anisha mikol ha-mekomos asher u'garsham, yinasu anshei mekomo v'kesu v'v'zav v'v'chushu v'v'hema, imanadav l'beis ha-lokim asher b'yushalayim. What does this mean? What exactly is he suggesting now? He's suggesting something else. What is that? What is he suggesting over here? What does it mean, V'chol anisha mikol ha-mekomos? Which means that whoever was left from the galus of the Nebuchadnezzar, mikol ha-mekomos, and all, wherever they may be located, what should they do? They should go ahead and support the person who is going to come back to Eretz Yisrael. Yinasu anshei mekomo. What should they provide him with? Kesev, zav, rechush. What should they give him? Gold and silver and property and livestock. Iman adav lebeis elokim asher b'yushalayim. Together they should give it with what? With some sort of a contribution that they're going to contribute to what? To the process of building the Beis HaMikdash. Essentially, he also is not just giving them a rishayon, a permission to come back to Eretz Yisrael, but what's also included? Included also are donations. Donations are, what is he telling them, are? Correct, donations are accepted. Feel free to donate to the Beis HaMikdash, whether it's gold or silver, etc., etc., etc.
Sounds like
obligates. No, see, I don't have that impression at all. An impression that it's sort of an option. The language is, I don't think it indicates necessarily a chiyuv, but some sort of an option, because he says Hashem will be with him, he'll make aliyah, he'll rebuild the Beis Hashem, the others will help him. He's not obligating everyone to do it. And look further, because we'll see in a little, in a while, and I just want to read another two psukim, namely Pasuk Kei. Vayakum Rashi Ha'avos Lihuda V'nyamim V'akonim V'alavim L'chol Heiru Elokim Esvucho La'aloth Livnos Es Beis Hashem Hashem B'Yushalayim. This is a very important pasuk, that whom exactly shall we say had this urge somehow? Rashi Ha'avos Lihuda V'nyamim V'akonim V'alavim. They have an urge to go back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. L'chol Sivoseim Chizku B'deim. And however, those who are dwelling among them, so what do? They are certainly ready to support the aliyah of others. Correct? How do they do so? Bichlei kesev, by giving all kinds of golden, shall we say, kelim, bazov, baruchush, vaveima, uva bignanos. What are bignanot? Bignanos generally refers to tzedol aderech, different types of vittles, as you would call them. Vittles is spelled victuals, V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S, but it means vittles, pronounced vittles. Refers to food, all kinds of food items. Levad, I'll call this Nadev. And furthermore, Va'amelach Koresh, Hotzi Esklei Beis Hashem, Asher Hotzi Nebuchadnezzar Yerushalayim. What does Koresh do? That he takes out the kelim of the Beis Hashem, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Yerushalayim to Babel, by Yidnei Beveis Elohav. Now, essentially, what does he do over here? What did Nebuchadnezzar, he had taken the kelim and the Beis Hamikdash and brought them to where? Brought them to Beis Elohav. Where's Beis Elohav? In Babel, correct? They were taken into captivity. So what does he do? Next pasuk, Vayotzim, Kerosh Melech Paras, Al Yad Mitzvadas HaGizbar, Vayisperim L'Sheish Batzar, Hanasi Lihuda. So, in effect, what does he do? He is in the process of, if you will, redeeming those kelim that were taken into captivity, so to speak, and now, once again, he's putting them in the hands of Sheish Batzar, and he's the one who's going to be in charge of this particular mission of the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Let's just read to the end of the parak. Ve'elam Isparam. Now he goes ahead and tells you all the Kalim that they were going to take with them. Agartu Le'zov, Shloshim, Agartu Le'chesem, Aleph, Nachal Afim Tishaviyasim, Kfarei Zav Shloshim, Kfarei Kesem Mishnim, Abraham Yavasawa, Kelim Achayim, all of them means they made an accounting. It's like an inventory of all the Kelim that they were taking back from the Nebuchadnezzar. Kol Kelim Vazov, Lakesem Chamesh, Alofim Yavam Yas. How many were they? Sachakol? 5,400 Kelim. Hakol Helo Sheish Batzar, Im Helo Sagola, Mibavel Yerushalayim. So this is a very fascinating first chapter that deals with the divine mission that somehow Koresh thought he was on. Now, just if you think for a moment, I don't know how, again, I assume you have some knowledge of world history, European history, American history, in some form or fashion. You may have encountered non-Jewish kings. Did you ever encounter a non-Jewish king with this kind of a proclamation, which he claims to have received from on high? He has a divine imprimatur that Jews should come back to Israel, make Aliyah, and he's going to support them and help them and assist them. This is an astounding kind of proclamation. Astounding. Anyone have any idea anywhere else in Jewish history where you may have seen something of a parallel nature? Yeah. I'm going to discuss the, that's what I mentioned, there are three Rishonot that I mentioned in the Sefer. He's one of them as well. Now he, you might argue, is a relative of whom?
Esther.
We'll see about this Daryavish fellow. He was a, certainly genealogically related to Esther. Chazal have a very fascinating discussion about it. But I'm always, whenever I learn Ezra, which I've done a few times, so I'm amazed and absolutely astounded. Now those who are familiar a little bit with modern history of the state of Israel, let's just, I assume that minimally you must have, I imagine, at least knowledge of that. There was a number of very fascinating things that took place in the last 150 years. Let's go back 150 years. I hope that's not too much. And these are all steps towards the establishment of a state. One of them, of course, was a very famous document called the Balfour Declaration. Are you familiar with the Balfour Declaration? What exactly was that? Who was Balfour? Let's start with that. What? Lord Balfour. From where was he?
British.
Right, he was British. And what exactly did he do? Where did that come from? I'm asking, the idea of the Balfour Declaration, from when did that emerge? I mean, whose idea was it? When did the Balfour Declaration take place? What year approximately? What year is what we're talking about? The 30s? Correct? So we're talking about way before the state of Israel was established, a Balfour Declaration, which is, what essentially was the gist of it? Could you just, don't go into details, but just tell me what was the function of this Balfour Declaration? Yeah. So basically they were willing to give us the ability to have a sovereign state and essentially to have a government and build a country and the like. That's an amazing thing. Absolutely amazing. Of course, you can imagine there was plenty of opposition to the Balfour Declaration. That's the understatement of the year. But that was not the only document where we were given some sort of imprimatur to go ahead and make Aliyah. That's not the only. Can anyone else remember any other document, proclamation, whatever you want to call it, that would somehow be parallel to what is being described over here in Ezra? Of course, Ezra is of a divine nature. And the Balfour Declaration was certainly not of any divine nature, that's for sure. Yeah, what? Yeah. Was it?
The UN.
Yeah, the United Nations, when they declared the state of Israel, what year was that?
1938.
1947. Right. So we had a number of plans, the partition plan, other kinds of things that took place prior to that, and the League of Nations even prior to that. There were many, many different steps. That itself, as I mentioned to you many times already, was a miraculous event, according to my humble opinion, miraculous beyond belief, that the world, this world by the UN, which is not exactly sympathetic to Jewish causes or Israeli causes or anything having to do with the state of Israel, would actually declare a vote to permit us to establish a state and be a part of the, I guess you want to call it, the global world kind of conclave that the United Nations was at that time. Rabbi Soloveitchik, I think I did mention this a number of times, he expressly stipulated, indicated that this day was one of the most miraculous events in the recent Jewish history, that the state of Israel was established. And it was miraculous at a number of levels. First of all, if you know that we weren't exactly at that point in time really capable of running a state with all the different aspects of what a state entails, such as the economic aspects of it, the military aspects of this, and in fact, one of the issues today that often many diplomats have with the Palestinian entity is that they don't really feel they're in a position to, if we do establish a state alongside ours, that they're in a position to actually govern it in any, how should we put it, in any satisfactory kind of fashion. And that's one of the issues that people have with the idea of a Palestinian state. But the reason why I mention this, the Rav has indicated many times, I said this already a number of times, that he felt the United Nations at that moment in time somehow acted miraculously, and it was almost neged hateva, neged anything that would be a rational statement on their part. And he always felt that somehow the hand of the Almighty was involved in establishing the state of Israel. And he has a very famous, one of his beautiful articles, really, which is kedai for you to read. I think it's also translated into English, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain it's translated. When the Rav spoke about the six knocks, and what article is that? Are you familiar with the name of the article? What? Anyone familiar with the name of that article, Rav Soloveitchik? I assume you read a little bit of Rav Soloveitchik, some of his classic pieces. This is really one of the classic essays that the Rav wrote. Probably one of the most telling essays where he really describes, you get a real a sense of what was happening at that period of time in history, both in Jewish history and the world history, and the six knocks that Hashem sort of knocked, shall we say, on our door. And the Rav was often referred to the Gemara in Ksubis. I assume you're familiar with that also. The Gemara in Ksubis has a very fascinating discussion about several oaths that were administered by Hashem to both the nations of the world and to the Jewish people. And it's based on these oaths, for example, that the Satmar Rebbe, Zichrono Livracha, was opposed to the founding of the state. It was opposed to the founding of the state because he felt that these three oaths are still binding. What are the oaths? That we're not allowed to go ahead and capture Eretz Yisrael using any kind of force. Of course, there were some of the oaths also were devolved upon the non-Jewish inhabitants of the world, that they could not oppress us, Yoter Midai, excessively. And the problem is that these oaths are not quoted by Halacha, not by the Rambam, nor by the Shulchan Aruch, nor by the Dalei HaPoskim. So most Poskim feel they're not binding. They have no validity al pi Halacha. But the Satmar Rebbe, in his famous Kuntzus al Gula ve'al Tzimura, what? The end of Ksubis, Kufiyut Aleph, I believe. So these oaths, do you have a Gemara here by any chance? I'll just read this to you also while I'm at it. Hishpati eschem benosu sholayim mitzvos of ailus asodeh in ta'iru bim toru sa abba chetechbats. Remember that puzzle shir shirim? Many people say shir shirim on Friday night. Here we have yes, the Yamid. Probably qualified. Do you say shir shirim on Friday night? Where you daven, they say it. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you, Shikoko. So here, the Gemara has in Ksubis, based on this pasuk, the Gemara quotes Kufid Aleph, it's still there. The Gemara quotes the pasuk, Hishpati Eschem Benos Yisholayim Mitzvos of Ailos HaSodeh. So among the three oaths were the following. Shulayi Yalu Yisrael Bachoma, one we should not go and attempt to capture Eretz Yisrael with force. Two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hishpias Yisrael Shulayi Yimrdu Mumus HaOlam, we should not rebel against the nations of the world. Three, the third shvua was Shelo yishtabdu b'hem ovdik chavim yosim idai, they shouldn't oppress us unduly, excessively. So many, such as the Yor Sameach, Rameh Simcha Kohen Midvitz, the author of the Meshech Chochma, the Yor Sameach, he contends that they didn't carry out their part of the bargain, therefore we're not going to carry out our part of the bargain. And number two, they certainly oppressed us, Baruch Hashem, unduly. That is without a suffix. And they also, shall we say, did other things intending to exterminate us. That's certainly oppressing us unduly. And it's not quoted by Halacha, so we don't have to be excited about this. The Satmar Rebbe, his entire sefer is based on this Gemara, Agula Ve'al Tzimura. So his contention is that the state of Israel is a obstacle in the face of the Geula. And therefore, to the extent that that obstacle is removed, the Geula will be able to be expedited. So in order for the Geula to come, he feels we have to dismantle the state, and thereby then we can enable the Geula to come. 99% of the Gedolei Yisrael disagree with his position. I would even say 99.9. He's the 0.1. Disagreed with his position and contended that these three else are not lahalacha, and they didn't carry out their part of the bargain. We don't have to carry our part of the bargain. There's even a famous letter, the Yosemech, a very beautiful letter that they attempted to, shall we say, obfuscate, conceal, where he writes, Sar Pachad Ashuos. The Yosemech himself was a more than a closet Zionist. He loved Eretz Yisrael. And he had a lot of discussion with the Chafetz Chaim Zatzal on this topic, on the issue of Zionism and what have you. But there's no doubt in my mind, I've said this many times, I'm not at all, shall we say, stymied by whatever people say. To me, probably one of the greatest miracles, if not the greatest miracle of this century, is the establishment of the State of Israel. I'm amazed by it. I told someone before, who did I speak to? I don't remember, that the fact that we continue to survive, and not to survive, but prosper and flourish, is to be a nes she'ein kamo. There's nothing which I think is comparable to that nes. And it's clear to me, a sign of Ashkacha. The rise of the Rav Soloveitchik board, you don't need my, shall we say, confirmation. And this to me is one of the biggest rayas that I find to be a raya she'ein ola tshuva. Ramban Chumash writes that as long as we are in Golus, Eretz Yisrael will be desolate. And when we come back to Eretz Yisrael, the Torah says that somehow the land will become prosperous, it will begin to enjoy what is called fructification, it will begin to somehow, as a result of it being tilled and nurtured and all that, the land will begin to emerge in its absolutely stunning beauty. There's no question about it since the founding of the state, and even prior to that, actually, that's in the last 100 years, when Jews came back to Eretz Yisrael, and when the state was especially founded, the Hatzlacha of Eretz Yisrael is unparalleled. Unparalleled. It's absolutely nothing comparable to it. And to me, it's exactly a realization of the words of the Ramban. Isn't it amazing that many, many nations tried to colonize Eretz Yisrael unsuccessfully for hundreds of years? I'm talking about the Turkish Empire, the Ottoman Empire. I'm talking about the good old Brits, our good friends in England. I'm talking about, of course, the Arabs who wanted to take over Eretz Yisrael. The Germans even wanted to build a colony in Eretz Yisrael. All of them failed. Failed dismally. No one succeeded for hundreds and hundreds of years till Jewish settlers came back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuilt the country and literally emptied the swamps and were able to clear the area of malaria and all kinds of other terrible diseases that unfortunately infested the place. And as a result, if that's not Hashgacha, I don't know what is. Yeah, what do you want to say?
How do we deal with the ancient borders?
Okay, the ancient borders, what are you referring to? There are several description of borders in Tanakh. Three different descriptions of the borders in Tanakh. And this is needs an entire course. That's what you have to study. Where are the borders found? Number one, in Parshas Lech Lecha. That's step number one. Step number two, second time it's found. Where are the borders in Eretz Yisrael found? Sefer Yehoshua, no question about it. And number three, another place in Chumash where the borders are found, in Parshas Maaseh. Three different sets of borders, which are almost, there are a fair number of contradictions and stereos. Okay, this needs a whole course.
But none of them are what they are today. They're just what we have.
That's correct. That's a correct statement. So, but the reason why I'm saying all this discussion I've had just now, is just to underscore the astounding fact that a non-Jewish king is giving permission, similar to the United Nations for Abdel, giving permission for the reestablishment of essentially Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael, which was, and he claimed it was based on what? A divine message that he received from on high. We're talking about a king who's an idolater, who is shakua be'ovdei elilim. We're not talking about someone who is all of a sudden overnight became what's the term that you use? Flipped like a pancake. No, we're not speaking about someone who flipped like a pancake, but rather a non-Jewish idolater steeped in idolatry. And as I'll tell you why I say this. I am amazed there are many, many Christians who are supporters of the State of Israel. I assume you're aware of that. There's a gentleman who actually lives here in SSL, well known. He is the recipient of millions of dollars of greenbacks, not just greenbacks, euros also. We don't object to euros. And he is the recipient of millions and millions of dollars, which he divvies up, and it comes from Christian sources. There are many who don't agree with him, who feel we shouldn't take that kind of money, and the Christians who are giving that money all have a hidden, shall we say, kind of agenda. The agenda being to missionize and to proselytize. I don't know enough to answer to say yes or no. In general, I feel we should always be independent. We should have to be dependent upon others. That's my general position in life. But it's an amazing thing that there are people who believe in the Tanakh, non-Jews, who take the Tanakh literally. This land is our land, the land of the Bible, the land of the Jews. I've been on planes with many such people, mostly from the South. These very evangelical kind of Christians and even Baptist types and even Presbyterians that I met who really have this. Okay, so I just want to underscore this first parak of Ezra, which is really amazing, that a non-Jewish idolatry king gets a epiphany, as I know if you call it, min ha-shamayim, that was supposed to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and he's even willing to assist us and help us in that process. I just want to stress the amazing aspect of that matter. Okay, I guess I'll stop here, and believe me, I shall continue. I plan, I have a lot of things to discuss in Ezra. I hope to do it with Hashem.